What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe. Yes, we are back after an extended hiatus. Sorry about that. But yeah, we're back with another exciting episode. And of course, it is me, Jonathan. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie.
Bonjour, everyone.
So we're back after the extended Christmas break. It's been quite an extended Christmas break, but we are back at the grind again, and we hope you enjoy listening to us again, because we should have an episode out every week going forward, and even maybe squeeze two in if we try and rattle the list off as quick as we possibly can. But without further ado, on this episode, we will be talking about the 1992 Hong Kong action thriller Hard Boiled, directed by John Woo. We have dipped into the toes of Hong Kong cinema, dipped our toes in the water of Hong Kong cinema, should I say, with a classic piece of John Woo action. First watch for me, first watch for Kenzie. Yeah, it's probably a film that should be on a lot of people's lists if they're looking for an action film to watch. And I must say, pleasantly surprised. This film's got some epically great bits of it. Some not so much, but we'll go on to that during our discussion.
Yeah, I wasn't really too sure what to expect. But we certainly did get boiled hard. It was, I don't know. I've watched not that many John Woo films, and I've not seen any of his ones that he's made in Hong Kong. I had only seen, Mission Impossible 2. Actually, that might be the only one I've seen, which is a film I don't like that much. And then I tried watching Silent Night. Me and Jonathan both tried watching Silent Night, and none of us have finished it yet. I don't know if the film's not maybe very good, but that's the thing with John Woo is now, it's going back to his roots, seeing what he was like now, seeing what he's like now and back then, because, people, most people would probably say that he's now fallen off. But we're going back to before he even done Face Off. So, hard boy. You said this is the last one he done before?
Before he moved to Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah, so... I didn't really know what to expect from it. I saw the poster of the film and I really didn't know what to expect from it. But, you can tell it's John Woo, I think. An early one for him. But, yeah, it's... I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of rambling on this one because I don't... The film was... I liked it. But the film's weird. I don't know. I don't know if it's just... I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain, isn't it?
Aye, I mean, it's kind of like, what kind of film would I compare it to?
It's like a crime film, but it's...
Yeah, it is a thriller, crime thriller, but there is some kind of comedic-ish stuff in it, and it's not quite a buddy cop movie. I would try to kind of compare it to Rush Hour for a minute, but it's not like that.
Nah, it's not.
It's kind of weird because before now, like I said, I've watched some John Woo. I've seen Hard Target, which he made after this, a Jean-Claude Van Damme film. Then he done Broken Arrow, then Face Off, Mission Impossible 2, Wind Talkers, and then Paycheck, which was his last film in Hollywood until he's made a return with Silent Night. So yeah, I have seen all of those apart from Wind Talkers, these American films, and this is the only non-American film of his that I've seen also. But he basically, in his legacy, has kind of changed the way action films were made in the 90s. And there's a lot of people that were trying to emulate his style, which you can see in this film. But before we started recording, me and Kenzie were talking about it, going, it's a bit janky. Because he does this bit in action sequences where he slow-mos bits, but it doesn't feel like he's... To me, he's not slow-moing for long enough.
It's just like so. It's like a lot so of samples, quick. Yeah.
And then the pace goes back up to like 100%. It's like
especially near the end. Really there's weird. Quite near the end. There's a lot of it. They're going down the corridor, and it's like slow for no really reason, and then back to normal, and then slow, and it's like.
I think it works better when there's action happening because it happened. So the tea room sequence in this film will probably be one of the scenes that most people talk about. If you talk about action cinema, this will be the one that they talk about. It's the shootout at the start, and it's cops versus gangsters.
Yeah.
Like the mafia or whatever, the triads. I'm guessing it will be a version of the triads.
I mean, if you're here for the action, you'll probably be very happy with it. The action is extremely hype. It's like...
So good.
It's so... Like over the it's 90s. If you've watched other John Woo, if you watch like things like Face Off, you can totally see that this is like the same director. It's just so much. It's like the ultimate shootout.
Yeah,
it really is. Like it's bullets flying. Oh yeah, that's one thing about this film is clearly they invented guns in this movie that can hold like 1,000 bullets in a magazine.
So this is the film where they kind of trace back the gung-fu.
Yeah.
Way of action, so they're mixing kind of martial arts with gunfighting. But it's well in the tea room sequence, you get the slow mo of tequila sliding down the banister.
Yes,
and he's just like capping everybody. That's great, like using slow mo there. But I still don't. It's kind of weird because it feels as if it's not long enough or it's too long. It's quite janky, and if you watch the film, which I do recommend watching it, specifically if you're into action films and have never seen it, you'll know what I mean when it's kind of jankily cut, but it's also 30 plus years old, and like we say, Hong Kong cinema, and I don't know if that makes a difference, but we do 90s films that are American films with big budgets, and they kind of look shite as well, so...
I think this film was just kind of weirdly edited. There's other Hong Kong films at the time that are just filmed better and stuff like that. mean, the action is still very strong. I don't know. The film feels put together a bit weird. Like, I mean, you start the film, like, you might get a bit, like, kind of like, whoa, what's going on? Because the film kind of throws you into it at first. Like, it starts with kind of like a little bit of jazz, you know, it's very quiet, and then it's like you're in like a, as you say, it's like a tea room.
Tea house.
And it's just kind of a lot of talking, but you can't really, it's kind of hard, it was a bit hard to follow for me. I was like reading what was like, we watched the original audio.
Well,
it's still technically dubbed. You can quite clearly tell this film was obviously dubbed, but I don't know if that was a common thing for films like that. I feel like a lot of times they used to just mouth words and then just put whatever over it. They used to not have scripts and stuff like that. Is that not a thing?
Another thing could be the noise.
The action. Yeah,
so, like, in action films, unless you are, like, I mean, audio is meticulous. I mean, even recording a podcast, it's like you pick up everything.
Yeah.
And it's, so if you've got a really loud action sequence, but you want some dialogue in it, I mean, how are you doing? Like, how many takes are you doing? But you still need the action. So it probably was a common practice to, during the act, you would probably see it more in the action sequences, feeling like it's been dubbed because, well, the noise on set is going to be a lot.
It's not just the action scenes, though. I mainly noticed,
I don't know.
I'm sure the whole film is dubbed.
Well,
because I was watching it, I was watching it with one of my friends, and they were going like, their mouths are not they're not syncing. And I'm like, yeah, that's quite clearly the whole film. I'm sure the whole film was completely dubbed over.
Possibly. I mean, I wouldn't. It does feel kind of out of sync. That's why when I watched it for a second time, I found an English dubbed version, which actually felt a bit better.
Did you think it felt better?
Well, because the problem is, you can kind of listen and know where you are, where I don't have to read.
Mm.
I can just watch the frame. I think sometimes with subtitled films, is you're too busy reading,
yeah,
and you miss things.
Quite a quick spoken film as well.
Exactly, so, like, and also it's quite quick when the action's happening, and it's
a lot is going on in this film, like a lot. I honestly think this is one of these films that after watching it probably would help to do a second watch of it.
Yeah,
because even I got multiple points as well. It's like the first part bust into an action scene, bang 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 bang, and I couldn't tell who was who. I didn't know who were meant to be the cops, who was, like, it took me a minute to realize who Tequila was, what was going on. And there's quite a few parts in the film where I was just kind of struggling to say, like, wait, who is this person? There's a lot to this film. So I guess maybe watching it with a kind of English dub or whatever language.
Or again, like just watching the same version a second time.
Or say, yeah, watching the same version could just help.
Well, the film does feel, you say, like, weird, the connectivity of it. I think there's a reason for that. The film is going through rewrites during filming. And I suppose any production that does that, the film's not a finished product. So, sadly, the original screenwriter died on a holiday trip.
Oh.
And, like I said, the original plot of this was to have Tony Leung's character being an actual baddie. He wasn't an undercover cop. He was a baby killer who poisoned babies. And that got rewritten out because I think they'd shown the script to American producers and they were like, actually, this is not something that...
I don't know what would that have added.
Not added. I don't know if the film would have been different. You've got to remember that
it must be quite a different film,
you know?
Right? Surely, because of what they went with him being an undercover cop.
Yeah.
Which I for ages I couldn't tell what he was, if he was undercover cop or not or what.
Well, no, because you can tell he's been in the system for that long.
He kills a lot of people.
Well, this is the thing, but he's killing a lot of bad people.
Yeah.
So that is how they justify it. He's not killing cops.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell his altercations with, Tequila's character,
yeah,
who's played by Yong Chow Fat, who might be more recognizable to people. What film would I say? I'm going to say, this is weird, I don't know if folk will have seen this, but Bulletproof Monk.
What is that?
See what I mean?
I think I've heard the name of it. What is that?
He plays a bulletproof monk.
Oh, but I think he's
teaching something. It's a weird, it's a fantastical, it's not a fantastic film, it's kind of a fantasyful film. Quite interesting, but I remember watching that and like distinctly knowing. I'm trying to think of other films where, off the top of my head, it's going to be. Yeah, I mean, he was in a few. Well, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, right, okay.
He also plays King Mongkut in Anna and the King in the 1999 film, which is basically like a version of The King and I.
Oh, right, okay.
But he's quite hard. Like, he's really recognisable. You know the face. Like, when you watch the film, you recognise the face, I would assume.
I recognise them? Not really.
No. For me, he's got a recognisable face anyway. Tony Leung, the guy that plays undercover cop Alan, was in Shang-Chi. He's the dad in Shang-Chi.
Oh, right, okay.
So he's in more recent Hollywood. Yeah. So it's quite easy to say, oh, so he's him. He also was in Wong Kar-wai's film, In the Mood for Love, which is a film that's on my list of films to watch because it keeps popping up in things that I listen to, specifically podcasts. What else has he been in? Try to think. Bulletproof Monk, I totally thought we'd know that. Dragon Ball Evolution, he was in that.
Oh, God.
That's a really bad film, though. But yeah, I mean, I suppose he spent a lot of his time in Chinese cinema. So yeah, I mean, maybe it's just people of my age that have kind of seen him in and around the sort of 2000, early 2000s, and then dipped away again. But not in this place, Tequila. Great. I like him in this. Tequila's kind of one of those characters where he's like such a rogue cop. Like,
he's cool.
He's like right on the line.
Yeah, he's like.
You can tell that this is a Dirty Harry kind of like homage.
Kind of ish, except with a lot more killing.
But Dirty Harry's trying to track down a killer, but you can tell that Tequila plays the law that way where he's like totally. If he thinks it's justified, he will do it.
He is the law, kind of.
Well, according to him. Well, even when he has showdowns with his boss, it's like, he's like, I don't care. Like, I'm in charge here. Like, which is quite interesting.
He is the kind of hothead.
Yeah. But, great. Like it. And it's kind of weird, like, Alan, the Tony Leung character, he's really calm and collected. As much as he kills people.
It's quite good, isn't it?
See, the way they set it up, though, quite like the library set up.
When the library comes in, boom.
There you go, and then puts it away again.
Yeah.
I like his wee origami cranes or swans or whatever. He leaves it every killing. But he stops Tequila being killed in the street.
Yes, he does.
So you know there's something, because before that point, Alan was just a baddie in the eyes of us. You don't see him being good.
You suddenly just kind of start following him, and
his story kind of takes over a bit,
and kind of Tequila kind of gets knocked to the back a little bit for a bit, but then they end up kind of intertwining as it goes along, and it looks like it's going to become like a kind of cat and mouse thing at one point, and then but that's not really the way it kind of goes. So it goes somewhere else, which I honestly didn't know what I was really expecting from this film. I really think I need to give this one another watch.
Hi, I mean, the story's kind of weird. Like, we now accelerate, and so Tequila and Alan start working together. But they're obviously, Alan's the one at risk because he's undercover. And they're trying not to blow his cover.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually does get found out. This is the massive set piece at the end in the hospital.
Hospital, yeah.
Where they get locked in some form of sewage network basement-y kind of place. And basically, they're taking the whole hospital hostage.
Yep.
Babies, a lot, everything. And it's like, becomes this big kind of shootout.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like, see, this is the thing that makes me think about films like this. It's like, shot for shot, no, but like even concept. So we talk about action films like Face Off and stuff, and John Woo kind of making an impact on in Hollywood action. But even like standoff shootout films, like The Raid,
yeah,
come to mind as well, where it's basically good guys versus bad guys in a one contained space. Who wins? And it's quite interesting. For as much as this, maybe this is just Hong Kong filmmaking, where the story side of it, they're not willing to not have that, you know, getting a bit of backstory. And that was one of the things that Chow Yun-fat said, was that he felt that his character didn't have enough backstory because they were trying to shorten the film.
Right.
So they took a lot of the stuff about his character's story out of it.
A lot of it's not, yeah, it's so not really focused on him.
And well, because he felt like Alan's character had a lot of stuff about him. So that's, Chow Yun-fat, he requested that they put the owner of the jazz bar, who's played by John Woo.
Yes.
But he told John Woo to play him because the reason for that is because they knew if they shot scenes with John Woo in it, he wouldn't cut himself out of the film.
Really?
Well, he's one of the editors on the film too.
So he wouldn't
cut himself out. So he kind of put this part forward to him, and it does give you a sense of who he is. Kind of
gives him a little bit more, yeah.
A bit of a personality or a character that's not just a rogue cop. There's a side of Tequila that
is calm and like.
Well, that's the thing. Like he gets his name from the drink that he drinks. I mean, he drinks tequila slammers. That's what you see him do at the start. He's a clarinet player. He obviously likes jazz. He's got all this arc. He's in a relationship with somebody that he works with that's, we don't really know how it's going, because at this present time, it feels as though they're not in the best place. And then to all the other cops, there's this random guy sending her flowers. It's Alan sending coded messages.
The codes, I forgot about that. I was so confused. The codes keep coming through, and I'm just like, what are these codes? What is happening?
But the problem is like, as much as it feels weird, not done the best, but I guarantee you there's loads of films I've went, that's a great idea, we'll do it better.
Yeah,
with the codes, and that's kind of one of the aspects of it. You can tell, and obviously in that part, Tequila's partner in the film, I forgot what her name was. Do you remember what her name was?
Teresa. Honestly, I don't remember like anyone.
Teresa is the female police woman. That part was initially written for Michelle Yeoh.
Oh, right, okay.
But they obviously condensed it to a point where, like, I don't think she was wanting to in the film, or I don't really know what happened there.
Well, she was becoming quite a big star, right? Well, in Hong Kong, anyway.
Yeah, maybe not a huge star, but, right. Yeah.
What year was it, 1990?
92.
Maybe not, then. She was in stuff, though, so maybe.
No, obviously. But it was just interesting, because she's now went on to be, like, massive. Last year, anyway.
She's literally got an Oscar now, so. Yeah.
I'm sure she was in Couching Tiger, Hidden Dragon as well.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, you had that. But, and I suppose we should sort of mention that this film is such a, well, say that, this film. I mean, there's parts of this film. Like the, what we should be talking about. So, David Fincher released a film last year on Netflix called The Killer, which is basically, it's kind of a homage to a film that already exists, although it's based on a graphic French novel. But there was a French film in the 60s called Les Samurai, and it's basically The Killer. But John Woo done a version of The Killer before this called The Killer. And that was obviously like a homage to the filmmaker of that. But Alan Delon's character in that film is basically, Alan's character in this has influenced them on him. So it's quite interesting, like, how films kind of go full circle, where And I think because Hong Kong cinema isn't mainstream for us, there'll be a lot of these films that exist that we've never watched or know about. And then when a film like The Killer comes out, like, I'm a big David Fincher fan, I'm not going to deny that. Then when you start reading about it, you go, actually, oh, so somebody else has done this film, or that film. So it's basically like a rip, and you go, that's the thing, like, I love David Fincher, but I would have expected him to make an original film, not a film that kind of already exists.
It's kind of like how when he done The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, eh?
Well, but that's an adaptation, it's kind of different. And I suppose, like, The Killer's based on the French graphic novel, but I suppose, like, even in written media as well, like, if you see something and then go, oh, I could maybe tweak that as a piece of graphic novel writing, like, it's quite easy. Like, see when two things exist or three things exist that are very similar, like, you can start kind of, specifically if there's dates, and it happens in music all the time, where you hear the same song. Like, what was the guy doing? It was like, do you know the Bon Jovi song, Living on a Prayer? So yeah. There's that hook, like, Shot to the Heart and You're to Blame. No, You Give Love a Bad Name, sorry. Not Living on a Prayer. Give Love a Bad Name.
Right, okay.
But that hook in there is in a song that came out, like, last year, like a R&B song.
Yeah.
But this guy mixed the same, it's the same hook in, like, five or six songs. And it's like, who done it better? And I'm like, is that just fraudulently stealing shit off somebody? And it's like, it's the same in movies. It's like, if you shoot a film shot for shot that already exists, is it, it's surely stealing. But where does the homage end and the stealing start? Like, you can pay tribute. And I think somebody like Tarantino's probably kind of managed to keep himself underground a wee bit, because the cinema that he likes is a style of cinema that not a lot of people watch. So how much stuff is he kind of rebranded as his that already exists?
He has taken shot for shots from certain films. I can't remember what he calls it. He doesn't call it stealing, but he calls it something. He says he takes from better films or something like that, or whatever. I think he said, but yeah. I guess it is kind of weird, like, especially when you're literally taking a shot for shot thing. Is that a steal or is that a homage or what? It's like, it really depends. I mean, if you're gonna take a whole film, then it makes sense. Like, you're kind of copying it, but, like, I mean, in the end, if it ends up, if you take something from something, but you're creating a new piece of media and it is genuinely new,
yeah,
then I guess that is fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the way I would see it anyway, is as long as you're not just making the same thing again. Or
I think is, I just get disappointed with filmmakers that I like, that I know can make really good original films. Yeah, like, right, so crux of this film is action's great. There's some weird kind of backstory stuff. It's quite slow. It uses a lot of editing techniques that I don't use, which I haven't actually used anymore. Dissolves down my fucking tits in. Some filmmakers use them. Sometimes they work, but for the most part, don't like them. Kenzie's not a fan of it either. I mean,
I don't like transitions. I like a hard cut. Very few times do I like. Like, Star Wars is, like, say for instance, Star Wars has got its thing. It does the side pan thing. That's a Star Wars thing. It works for that. But, like, they just look weird. I don't know. I just like, hard cuts just look professional and just look nice. Cut to blacks. Fade to blacks are all right. Or sometimes you can. That's a dissolve. Dissolves can. It depends on the thing.
Right. But, like, I don't mind dissolve, right? So. The one place a dissolve works is like in an epic landscape.
If you're
trying to time jump. So see, like, I'm just using John Wick as an example, and they don't do this, but if it did do this, is like, see if when he was in the desert.
Aye.
If it was like a big sprawling, but then you wanted to kind of jump the action a bit. You could dissolve one scene into another.
I think they do it in John Wick 3.
So that's fine. Because, like, you're in a massive, vast area that's really difficult to
also shows, like,
jump.
The passage of time.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, in a film like this where you're, like, dissolving into, like, somebody's face or another location, just cut to the location. Like, you don't need to dissolve and then let it linger. It's kind of weird. But saying that, like, I used a transition in my short film that Kenzie doesn't like, but doesn't actually have to be there. I could have just hard cut it and it would have been fine, but there was a reason. I done it for a reason. I wouldn't just use them normally. I don't normally use dissolves when I make anything. Say that I make things, I don't. I've made a couple of things, but I don't dislike. Like, I like a jump cut. I mean, my first wee short, my wee 1 minute thing has got some mad jump cuts in it. Like,
jump cuts there.
Like, that depends how you use them. Mm. Like, they have to be there. It's like, I wouldn't just jump cut for the sake of jump cutting, but it's like a montage sequence, you know? Like, You wouldn't just have a montage for no reason. I think the problem, all the action sequences are great. All the kind of bits in between are a bit meh.
That is it.
I suppose it's the same with a lot of action films. If you just want all-out action, it's like you don't want the kind of story part.
Here for the action. And it's over-the-top action where they just fire and fire and fire bullets. Like, I mean, if you just go the tea scene alone, Tequila has two small pistols, which probably hold, seven bullets in each?
Maybe seven or eight.
Maybe I pushed 12.
Between like 6 and 12 bullets each.
Yeah, he fires, it has to be hundreds, and he kept on going, and he keeps on going, and I'm like, no fucking way, it's still going. I'm like, it got to the very end, like, oh, he's going to run out now? Doesn't run out for the whole scene. And I'm just thinking, he's put infinite ammo on. He's playing with cheats on. It's like, that's the point that I think, that John Woo has been known for this. Even Face Off does this and stuff like that.
This is the thing, right? It's the problem with a film like this being used as an example of having an impact. So, like, John Wick, for instance, he has got unlimited ammo, but I think John Wick's one of the only films where you see the protagonist put ammo in his weapon.
Reloads,
changes weapons
when he runs out.
But it's part of that film. And it's the way the guns... It's the way that he loads and reloads.
It's very technical. There's only a couple parts in John Wick where you notice that, like, okay, he fires a bit. Like, I think John Wick 4, the end part of John Wick 4 when he's like on the bike, apparently fires it was over 20 shots or something. Which, yeah, of course. But you can give it...
It's a film. It's not real life.
It doesn't bother me that much unless it's really noticeable.
Yeah.
But the thing with this film is it doesn't bother me at all.
It has to happen.
It adds to this film. The fact that it's over the top and unlimited bullets makes the action even better.
Yeah.
It works. It depends on the film. If you're going for a grounded take on your tactical thing, I want you to try and have it to reload stuff like that. But if that's not like a big thing and you're doing a kind of more cheesy thing or not something that has to be taken so seriously, I can do what you want. If you want to fire about a million bullets up, I mean, he's like, this is taking it to the ultimate extreme.
Yeah,
like they just don't reload at all until they're out of bullets. It's like, they just imagine you put one magazine in and it's just connected to like a chain of all your bullets. It's pretty much, they're chain guns. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, well, it doesn't bother me in the slightest, I suppose. No. But like, I get what you're saying. It is like, there is an infinite ammo glitch in the film. But no, like, you look at the action sort of sequences or like the set pieces, you've got the tea house scene, the warehouse, what would you call that? Like the docks, the warehouse, you've got that scene.
I mean, after that, you don't really have anything until
the hospital.
It's actually, that's the kind of thing with this film, it's kind of odd, because you're like, you get straight away, you're like, fucking, whoa, and then you have like, you're
the
trying
pa-
to,
pa- the like,
pace
the,
just stops.
The pace is weird.
Some crime story that's all right.
Yeah,
it's not like a, it's nothing like new.
I think the problem is it's like, well, say it's not new. This film came out like
1992.
I'm not saying that it probably wasn't new. But the thing is, because crime films had been made for years. The thing is you've also got to remember that it was being written while they were shooting. Yeah.
It's like it's made for the action, really.
Yeah.
That's the main point of the selling point of this film, is the action. Like, it has a story that works.
Yeah.
It does the job. It's not bad by any means. It's actually okay. It's all right. It keeps you like interested enough. But the special edit of this film is it's a crime film with the added high end action that you didn't get at the time.
And
it's proper. It's very just straight up guns blazing. It's not a lot of like hand to hand. It's mainly just
guns,
guns, guns, guns, guns, guns, which nowadays they probably mix them together more, whereas this, I don't know, it was kind of...
Well, this was just shootouts, yeah.
Shootouts, and but body count, I'm right, oh my god.
Great.
How many innocents died in that first scene, I swear to
loads.
God? Loads. Loads of them. They don't I don't know the word is, but they have a fucking huge count of the deaths. It's very entertaining.
That's an entertaining film. I think John Woo was meant to move to America before this point, right? But what I think what happened is he had a film come out and it didn't do well in Hong Kong, and then you know that way where, like, I don't know how it works for it. Suppose it's the same would be independent cinema to us. If we made an independent film,
yeah,
or if we managed to make a self-produced film, I mean, if it became a success, you're probably more likely to make a jump to something.
Make a huge jump.
Whether it, well, not even huge, maybe it's to a slightly bigger independent film.
I mean, look at Raka Raka.
Aye, or Raka Raka Boys, or, I mean, there's loads of examples, but if you were to stay in the independent, say you'd done it, your first film was like massive or big for what you'd done.
Yeah.
And you went, do you know what, I want to make another one of these, but then it wasn't that good. You would probably feel really weird making the jump then, or you might not have the opportunity. I think that's what happened to John Woo, is like, he was really successful in Hong Kong cinema for ages, and then he dipped in the mid-80s, and I think he had to find financing for one of his projects, and then The Killer kind of gets talked about as an actual banger of a film, and I really want to watch it. And then obviously he does this, and then this is springboards him to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then he stays there for 10, 15 years. And he's just making Hollywood, and then it kind of wanes again, and then he just... Because I think what happens is like, it's all new, comes in, the action in the 90s explodes, he's great, does a Mission Impossible film where people don't really like it, then does a couple of other films, and he's kind of, I think folk will be like, oh, he's fell off. And so what he does is he takes his fame and fortune and name and goes back to Hong Kong and makes other films.
I think it's just a bit unfortunate for John Woo. John Woo, he's a very specific type of action, and it is very 90s.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't really transfer well into nowadays action.
Yeah.
Unless you're looking for a kind of homage. If you really just go for that homage to 90s action,
no, but
probably do quite well. But like, it's just like,
what annoys me is I don't get why he can't look at filmmakers that have totally...
He doesn't change.
Well, no, but folk have kind of stole his style and made it new.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't he look at those films and go, I can make that?
I guess he is.
Or I can make that, but I suppose when you've got a distinct style, it's like, you know, it's like asking Tarantino to make a Spielberg movie.
Like, I feel like...
Do you know what I mean? And it's not going to happen.
I feel like he is changing. Like, I didn't fully watch Silent Night, but watching like Silent Night, even from the trailer, from the shots, it does seem like he's trying new stuff.
Be
a bit more like kind of John Wick-y kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Still got the slow-mo.
Oh, we'll still have the slow-mo. Like, it's him, in a nutshell, is the slow-mo. It's just how he uses it, when he uses it, how long he uses it for. It's like...
Even Mission Impossible was trying something different.
Everything's trying something new.
But...
I can't believe you've never seen Face Off.
I've seen quite a bit of it. At least the last little bit of it.
I fucking love Face Off.
The main part I remember is when... John Travolta, I think, has got the Uzi, or whoever, someone's got an Uzi, and I think they rip about a million bullets at that thing. That's the only part I really
see.
Remember.
The thing is like that to me as well. Like in the '90s, he made like a proper R-rated action film.
Yeah,
I mean the guys had surgery to swap faces.
Yes,
and it's fucking great, and it's quite violent, and it's like, but in the '90s, action kind of got a bit more blockbuster, and they wanted like it to be like PG-13 almost, you know what I mean? Like, that's so that they would make loads of money. And like, that's why John Woo works for me, and that's why I like John Woo. It's like, I want action films that are made for adults. I don't want, and that's what annoys me about Marvel, is because it's action movies that are made for kids that adults can watch. But I want an espionage crime thriller that's really good. Like, that's great, and they don't seem to exist anymore.
Espionage is gone.
Well, it shouldn't be, because
I know,
great.
I miss it. I go back and watch like the older kind of like your older kind of Bond films, and more espionage than that.
It's so good. Like, they should bring it back. And I suppose that's why I like John Woo. I like things like Face Off. And I like films like Speed, you know, and stuff like that. Like, because they're action films that aren't made for kids.
Yeah.
I want to watch a Face Off. I don't want to watch Armageddon.
I've never really want to. It looks so cheesy, yeah, well, and bit shite. Folk, I don't folk, know. I know people like it.
But anyway, good film, done well. Like I said, it's pacing's to be honest with you, there's two things that let this film down for me is the pacing and
yeah.
the writing. The problem is we've spoke about the writing, and it's really quite an impossibility. This should never ever happen where you're writing a film while you're shooting it.
It's apparently this is a common thing in Hong Kong.
Well, I mean, this kind of happened because they had to rewrite it because of the character arc change, and the screenwriter died, so
yeah.
that's just sad that something like that would happen. But
remember,
and like if that happened in Hollywood or UK cinema, what would happen is
postponed.
They would postpone it, or so there would be two options. They would A, just make the film that's written, or they would rewrite it entirely
or cancel it.
But it's more likely to be cancelled these days.
Probably
just
more
shelved.
Likely to be cancelled now.
Doesn't
exist. Put on the shelf and it's never come back to it. I remember I watched them, I think it was like one of the things that they have, like, people looking at back at the roles, and I remember Donnie Yen talking about what, like, making, like, Hong Kong action films in the 90s was like. And he says, like, comparing it to, like now, for, like, American films and stuff like that, it's just, like, they pretty much went there, they didn't even choreograph most of the action. They made it up as they went along. They go just do that, and then whatever they've had written, they'll just go with that, or they're literally getting handed lines on the day of, which is like something you just do not get in Hollywood. Everything's planned out, the action's got to be planned out and ahead of the time, and it's the same with all the scripts and stuff like that. And it's just a different way of making movies, really. I wonder if Hong Kong cinema's not really talked about as much anymore. I think it was that 90s, the 90s was really, 90s or like kind of late 80s. Oh, actually, to be honest, a lot, it's, 90s was kind of the heyday, I think, for a lot of Hong Kong action films. Most of the Hong Kong action films that come out now usually don't get that good ratings, or ones that you know a lot about. I mean, there's a couple that do stand out, like Ip Man and certain ones like that, but a lot of them don't anymore, and it's kind of a shame. Has that genre of films kind of lost its touch? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's an iconic film that has got a lot of impact and legacy, which we will touch upon in about 15 minutes' time. But yeah, that's enough about the film and our mad tangents, and we hope you enjoy our discussion when we go off mad tangents, because I really fairly enjoyed it. And but yeah, on the podcast, if you're a regular listener, you know that we dive into six metrics to see whether the film is cult or not, and those are rewatchability, quotability, low budget short box office flop, impact and legacy of the film, not reviewed well by contemporary critics at the time, and how controversial does the film talk about controversial subjects, topics and themes. So yeah, I mean, straight off the bat, I would say this film's highly rewatchable for me.
I mean it's
a lot, it feels longer than it is.
It does, it feels really long. I was just thinking near the end of it, I was thinking, how is it still going?
But it's two hours, which nowadays isn't actually that bad.
But the thing is you wouldn't mind sitting through it because the action is very good.
Yeah.
And that's the really strong point of this film. And when the action kicks off, it really does kick off. Especially the hospital scene at the end goes on for ages. It's a very long segment. So it's a film I think you'd always kind of go like, you know what, I feel like watching some intense, over-the-top, high-octane action, and this is a great choice for that. Out of a lot of John Woo's catalogue, I feel like this one would stand up to like choosing something like Face Off. Maybe Face Off overall is probably a better film, but I don't know, the action in this is something to be talked about.
Yeah. But yeah, I think this is worth a watch. And I mean, if you're into action films, it's definitely a rewatchable film. Quotability is a funny one because obviously it's a Hong Kong.
It's hard.
Made, it's obviously dubbed quotes in subtitles and
yeah.
English dubbed. As much as I watched an English dubbed version, it was still the actors that played the parts. So it was really weird.
I can't remember. There's one line I like specifically near the start. I'm trying to remember what the line was. It's talking about tequila. It's like, I'll give him a gun. And, I can't remember the first part of the line. It's like, give him a gun and he's something, something. Give him two guns and he's a god.
Aye, Superintendent Pang, give a guy a gun, he thinks he's Superman. Give him two and he thinks he's God.
Yeah. That's a very good line.
That's really good. That is really good.
That's the one that stood out to me for the most part. I don't know about anything else, though. I think it probably does have, like I said, that was a good, that's a very good line, so it could be slightly quotable. Maybe more, like again, it's hard, maybe it's not as easy to quote films that you don't speak the language, probably, yeah. As well. Who knows, maybe in Hong Kong and like China, this could be a film that could be quoted quite a bit.
Like, I mean, I find it a bit funny where it's like, at least you'll get a lot of sacks. They talk about he's trying to find somewhere to live. And he references living in the jazz bar that he plays in.
Does that transfer into the in their language?
Yeah. That's what he says. But like I said, though, it's hard in these films. It's really difficult. I think it's fun. I didn't realise because when I watched it in the subtitle version first, I didn't realise, but when Alan speaking to Pang, who they know each other, obviously, even though Alan's undercover, but Tequila doesn't know Alan, and he asks if he's got a cop called Vodka. That's what I originally, no, it's Tequila. It's called Tequila. He's a tough cop. He is a tough cop. Never looks like a cop, though. No, in fact, when he's wearing the tactical gear in the kind of warehousey fight, he looks like a cop.
Makes me think of like the Raid almost. That's what I kind of thought of when I first saw the poster for this film. Is it made me kind of? It's not really like the Raid, but at all really. But I don't know. It's made me think of that. This wasn't the film I was really expecting to get. To be honest, I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, true. I mean, like we say, it's hard. I mean, like we say, most of these, it's quotable. If we can come up with 100 quotes straight away, and this is really difficult because it's not our native language, so. Box office, what was it? Low budget short box office flop. I keep forgetting these. I should probably write them on the wall somewhere.
I mean, this one was
just... I had a $4.5 million budget. This is US dollars, and it's kind of weird where I don't. It's
crazy how you can make a film like that on $4 million.
Aye, but it's quite a lot of money for 92, probably.
No.
No?
No, I don't think it is.
Nah.
$4 million in 92, that's not a lot. That is not a lot, especially for a film like this.
If you were to make an action film like kind of similar to this now, you would get a John Wick, which would cost you what, like $50 million?
I mean, John Wick 1 was like
40.
For the 40?
Sure, it's 40.
What surprised me though, a film like Nobody was $17 million.
Yeah, but how much did Bob Odenkirk get paid? You've also got to remember that actor salaries are included in that figure.
Well, do you think he would have got a lot? I mean, he's not the biggest actor.
Well, but I mean, off of things like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and stuff.
I mean, he's not a movie star.
I would say he would at least get $5 million. At least
so $5 million. So there we go. $12 million.
I can make a film.
It's $12 million.
Right, so we made a short film and no budget, right? Uh-huh. But like, how much? Like, if you were genuinely pricing a film, say you were genuinely going to make a movie, how much do you think it would cost? Like loads.
It's got tons. It's lots.
So, like, I think it's bizarre, like, when actors' salaries are included in your figure and you go, I mean, how much has Keanu Reeves made for playing John Wick? Probably quite a lot, because they needed him to be John Wick. And, realistically, now that he's playing John Wick, nobody else can be John Wick. And now that when he took the role and you've seen it, you're like, even if they recast him, I don't think they could ever have done that. I don't think Keanu Reeves is ever the type of guy to leave a project, but... Is that type of role? So what do you pay somebody like that?
I don't know what Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is a weird one. I mean, that Keanu Reeves is the guy who just turned down his pay so they could get Al Pacino for a film. So
Devil's Advocate.
Yeah, he just said, take my pay and give it to Al Pacino so you can get Al Pacino. as Al Pacino.
Al Pacino.
Because they didn't have enough of him.
Guy. No, well, because he was probably one of the most expensive actors in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a flat rate. Like, I think, like, what is the upper rate is, like, 25 to 30 mil for a film. I think that's what Leo charges. Somewhere in
what,
there.
30 million?
Somewhere between 25 and, I think, 25 or 30. Well, right, so the only reason I know this is another weird tangent, but it links in a weird way. Inception.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a massive risk for Warner Brothers to make Exception, or, well, Exception, make Inception, or let Christopher Nolan make it. A decently big budget for a unknown film. Like, it's a total original fucking weird concept. They didn't know how it would go. So, to get your films off the ground, if you can get a massive actor in for nothing, which essentially what happened is Leonardo DiCaprio forgoed his upfront money and took a 5% of the film's profit, or the film's box office as his pay, which could have been nothing, but it turned out to be 40 million, over 40 million.
Good,
but directors do it as well, where they'll take a
chunk of the...
Right, they'll take a percentage on first dollar gross.
Now it's highly...
So it's, they don't do that anymore because the studios want to recoup their money first.
Yeah, it's highly... not. A lot of actors would say don't do that now. Because apparently they say for the most part, even if a film makes a good amount of money, you probably won't get paid very much because of how much gets taken out by...
No, it's if you sign a contract where it's first dollar, then it's for every single dollar they earn. So it's different. You obviously have contracts where it'll be you get a percentage after the studio takes all its money back. But the way that DiCaprio done it is it was first dollar gross means that he gets 5% of any money the movie makes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a contract like that, which is totally safe. If you believe in the project and you think the film's going to make $1 billion, you take that, because then what's 5% of a billion? Like, fucking loads of money. Like 50 million? No. That will be, like 50 million.
Mm.
Just twice what you would get paid. But it is obviously a risk. I mean, you can just take a reduced salary if you really like the filmmaker, you know, which is maybe something that would do. But no, it's an interesting fact. Like, films do cost lots of money and actors cost a lot of money. Yeah. Like, the Fight Club episode was interesting to find out that Brad Pitt got paid like 4 or 5 times what Edward Norton got paid for the film, and he's...
In that time as well.
1999.
That's crazy.
And I think Edward Norton is the main actor in the film.
The main actor, but
the problem is he'd only been in like
a handful of films. Primal Fear.
Primal Fear was his first role. American History X, Fight Club. But he's maybe in a couple others, but they were the big three in a row.
Yeah. And well, Brad Pitt hadn't been. I mean, he probably had things like Meet Joe Black. And
he was a megastar at this point.
Like, is he really a megastar by 19?
Dating Jennifer Aniston. No, they were a power couple then. Like, you know what I mean? Well, he was the next big thing. The problem with Brad Pitt is he spent a lot of time in Hollywood making a lot of shit films. Like Troy and Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I actually like Troy.
Not but like Mr. and Mrs. Smith and a lot of these.
Is that bad? I've not seen it.
That's the thing. Like, I think he's a good actor, but I don't think he's a great actor.
I think he's a pretty fucking good actor.
I would rather watch Keanu Reeves than I would Brad Pitt.
That's a hard choice.
How's that a hard choice?
I love them both, mate.
I just think Keanu Reeves is in a lot of films that I would like to, but especially
got some bangers,
especially lead performances as well.
I mean, two alone. You've got The Matrix, you've got John Wick, and they're so...
Speed.
Point Break.
Bill and Ted. Comedy in there. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm afraid I forget how strong some of Keanu Reeves' roles are.
Yeah.
Like, he's done a lot of absolute shit.
Aye. Like 47 Ronin and shit like
47,
that.
Well, I've watched that. I was really disappointed with that.
Yeah, but he's interested in that
replica
Japanese sort of history.
But he's also done, when he hits, usually.
Yeah.
Whereas like Brad Pitt can be all over the place. It could be a very good film. It could be a shit film. It could be an film. He's done a lot, like Adastra. Adastra was a film.
The James Gray movie, and a lot of people love James Gray as a filmmaker.
boring.
Which the thing is like, I think when Brad Pitt works with great filmmakers, he's relatively good, you know.
Didn't like World War Z. I'm just gonna say that right now.
I don't even know who made World War Z.
I don't know who made it. I just thought it was a shit film. And people kind of tell me, actually, no, it's not that bad.
Well, no. I don't know what it was. So he teamed up with Fincher again, Benjamin Button, which is actually quite a good film.
Good
it's
film,
not,
but it's not,
not for everybody.
It's not for everyone. And I, to be honest, it's not a film. If I was going to watch a Fincher film, I would never choose that one.
No.
But it is a good film.
I mean, Fight Club's iconic.
Yep.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
He's so good in it.
But then it's a Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, most people in Tarantino films are all good.
True.
I mean, even... like,
is there a bad performance in a Tarantino film?
I don't know. We need to do a Tarantino rewatch all these films.
I've been doing it. I'm on. I think we need to watch Kill Bill next.
We should start again.
Start again. Let's go back and.
Should do a We'll do a Tarantino rankings episode, and we'll talk about all these films.
I've got four of his films on Steelbook.
He's a filmmaker that I like, and I don't know if I love, but maybe I will fall in love with him.
I have four films on Steelbook. I'm planning to have. I'm trying to get all of them if they come out.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, $4.5 million budget.
Small.
Small, fair enough. You call it low budget.
And the box office, well, it's kind of hard to tell. And obviously in Hong Kong, it did well. In the US, not very, but it wasn't the audience it was going
for. And also it's got some form of French ticket sales, which I don't know.
Why did they tell you how many tickets were sold in France? Is $85,000 a lot?
I don't know. Like, I really don't know. No, it can't be a lot because it's like, what's the biggest... the viewed biggest screens like 300 and odd tickets.
35.
So it's like you could do.
Wow, weird.
How many screenings could you do a day? Like 8 to 10. So you're like a 3,000 a day. No, I mean, that's not, but I suppose 3,000 a day, 80 odd tickets. I mean, that's still like 30 days. Maybe it is a lot. I don't know. Like, how long do films stay at number one in the cinema listings? I don't know. Like, it's kind of changed these days, but fair, we'll say it was a low budget anyway, so it does meet the criteria. Now, not well received by contemporary critics, stroke reviewers. I mean, this is a hard one. It's fucking so well loved. Even now, retroactively, you've now got 30 plus years of going back. I mean... 7.7 on IMDb, that's always a funny one though. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes is a good one. It's a 92% audience score. It's also a 92% fresh rating on the tomato meter, which is incredibly high. It's I think Face Off's a 93%. So I don't know what John was highest rated film is, but I mean, Face Off is slightly more. I want to watch Face Off again. I'm thinking about it in my head.
Is Broken Arrow any good?
Nah.
See, he seems to miss a lot, doesn't he?
Aye. I mean, well, he done Hard Target first, which is a Jean-Claude Van Damme film, then Broken Arrow. But like Jean-Claude Van Damme films, like if you're moving into action, like it's one of those action stars. Like it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme film. It's a bit like saying it's a Steven Seagal film. To me, those Steven Seagal, not so much. It was like, for me, if you were ranking the kind of action stars, but you've got to remember, like, people like Dolph Lundgren and that, they had their own career outside of being in Rocky, you know? But I think, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme to me is third on the list of 80s action stars that kind of were doing those kind of films. Sylvester Stallone would be two, and Arnie would be one. Those would be the three for me. Like, and you can kind of tell that because all three of them have been in Expendables. Obviously, it's Sylvester Stallone's movie franchise, but Arnie's shown up in it, Jean-Claude Van Damme's shown up in it. She obviously knew there was a competition amongst them. I mean, Arnie just fucking ripped everybody to shreds in that time. He was just so good. I mean, the guy was larger than life in more ways than one. Like, but I can't wait to do some. Have we done an Arnie film on the podcast yet?
Predator.
Oh, we have. Great film.
Yeah.
We've got an even better one still to do. Can't wait.
Oh, of course, right.
Well, it's got the iconic, the most iconic one.
Freeman, yeah.
I watched Conan the Barbarian the other night, yeah. Good film.
Yeah, that's what I keep
forgetting. I'm surprised that's not on the list.
I mean, that's probably more of a cult film than any other ones.
Mm. But we already know the poster's fake, so it's like, yeah, we already know that some of these films aren't cult. I mean, The Godfather's on it, fuck's sake, come on, they're like... Kenji, yeah, hard fact, Kenji doesn't like The Godfather, let's bring that one up. I'm not going to have a discussion.
Let's just go past that.
He would give it like a 2.5 star.
I gave it a three, but honestly, that was me pushing.
Which also means that he likes Argyle, The Beekeeper, Baghead, fucking Night Swim, Poor Things more than The Godfather.
If I gave Godfather a 2.5, it means I think it's just as good as Baghead.
That's fucking terrible. Right, flame them, everybody that listens to this. Flame.
Come at me if you want.
That is a fucking horrendous. That is a horrendous take.
Honestly, don't think it's that good of a film. Fucking, I'm sorry, shut up. Sue me.
We're gonna have an argument. I'm glad you weren't on that episode. I'm not glad.
I would have got punched in the face if I was on that episode.
You wouldn't have got punched in the face, but it would have made for a good episode because you and Nick would have ganged up on me, and I wouldn't have liked it. But I would have won the argument though.
It's a classic. It's a classic.
I mean, I even turned Nick around.
Oh, you ain't turning me around.
But mate, you can watch 1,000 films, right, and take in all aspects of filmmaking, performance, everything. It's easily in the top 5%. Easily. Like, you can't argue with that. As much as you don't like it, the performance is that good, you can't be like, oh, I'll give it props for being good. You've got to be right into it and go, it's amazing. You know what I mean?
I don't have to be right into it. I just don't think, I genuinely just don't think it's that good a film. It's, I'm sorry. I just thought it was slow. I didn't think there was really that much to it. It's just, maybe again.
Right, we're now on a weird tangent. I brought up The Godfather. I shouldn't have done it. Anyway. So yeah, controversy. Not so much. I bet if it was a baby killer,
it would have been.
Would have been.
It dodged that.
Dodged the controversy.
I mean, I saw a lot.
It's now just about the triads and the cops.
I want to know why they put a baby in the poster. Maybe the poster was slightly controversial. You know, a police officer with a shotgun holding a baby.
Because he saved all the kids, man.
I know he saved all the kids. I know that's why it's there. But when I saw that, I was like, is he going to be like carrying a baby the whole film? Is he going to be like shoot him up with Clive Owen?
No. But yeah, maybe the poster was done before they changed the plot of the film.
It was kind of weird when they go to the hospital scene, because they start shooting a lot of the babies. It's like, wait, we're focusing on a lot of these babies. What's going on? But it's just because they need to be saved later on. It's just, it's not a big part of the film or anything.
Well, I'm glad they weren't shooting them or poisoning them though. Like, I'm kind of glad that just got changed.
I'd even know if they would show that.
It's a crime film. It's good guys, bad guys. It's like cowboys, Indians. It's fucking. It's what you want. It's everybody's rooting for Tequila and Alan, and everybody wants what's his bad guy named? Johnny Wong. Is that what his name is?
Something like that.
Is that the actor? Like, Johnny Wong is a bad guy.
And for the whole film, I was always asking, who the fuck is Johnny Wong?
Who's Johnny Wong? Johnny Wong's a bad guy, and then his informant, he's a cunt too. Mad Dog, the guy with the eye patch.
Oh, he was so stupid. He takes the change.
The enforcer.
And goes to
he
shoot.
He actually, he wasn't meant to be in the film.
Does he know?
Originally.
But didn't he, isn't there a part, he tries to change and shoot the other guy, but there's like no bullets in the gun. Blast him away.
But he's like, the informer. It's apparently because Johnny Wong didn't seem intimidating enough. Which, I mean, most of the time when you get to that level, you aren't that intimidating. You've got hundreds of guys that do all your dirty work for you anyway. But yeah, not controversial. But impact and legacy. This is where it wins.
This is probably one of, like, for Hong Kong action films, this one's good. Definitely be looked at.
Well, I also wanted to just wanted to say, talking about film not well received, but it was well received, but Empire Magazine gave it a 4 out of 5. Which is, they're my people.
You're your guys, your fellas.
All my Empire
stacks.
All my stacks. And I've got new ones as well. I actually like the fact that I've got a subscription.
I've actually been tempted, you know.
Because I went into the shop today and I looked at the magazine and I'm like, it's so busy, the cover.
Yeah, it's too much. I'm learning about it in college.
Whereas mine is like a bestow, it's like an artist cover.
Yeah.
And it's clean. There's nothing on it.
Nothing on it.
It's great. But I think I'm like two magazines ahead. Because I think the one in the shop's Ghostbusters at the minute. And I think I've already got next month's. It's somewhere about behind you, I think. Anyway. But I just wanted to point that in there. But legacy and impact of the film. Well, we spoke about it a bit earlier. But also, they're talking about video games. Max Payne
was like, yeah, of course.
And Stranglehold, the John Woo game. Do you ever remember that?
No.
They had a John Woo video game.
I know that.
I also like this. In an era dominated by CGI, hard-boiled relied heavily on practical effects. The explosions, stunts, and gunfights were all accomplished using real props.
In an era...
CGI.
In 92.
Aye.
They're kind of pushing it a little bit, aren't they?
I mean, maybe they're talking about nowadays.
I mean, I guess that makes... Yeah, you're talking about, of course, nowadays, yeah. But
aye, John Woo's signature filmmaking style, characterized by slow-motion, dual-wielding pistols.
Yeah.
And dramatic cinematography.
And unlimited ammo.
And we that. Also said that. It also says that the movie is a visual treat for action movie enthusiasts. It really is. Memorable cat. Fucking tequila is great. Al Acquire, Alan. Tony Leung's a great actor as well. Johnny Wong's about an over-the-top leader, but good. You were saying about the plot, so the intricate plot, so maybe it wasn't as common back in the day. The film follows the story of a tough undercover cop, Tequila, who is on a mission to take down a group of ruthless criminals involved in the illegal arms trade. The plot is filled with suspense, twists, and unexpected turns, that it is. Because I didn't know that Alan was an undercover cop.
Nor did I.
So they played that one quite well. This was the sixth film between Chow Yun-Fat and John Woo made together. Iconic gunplay, we all know about that. The bloodshed. See, it's only with Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez. Oh, impact on Western cinema.
Yeah.
Influencing filmmakers like Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, its influence can be seen in movies such as Reservoir Dogs and Desperado. It surely can. Specifically Desperado. You ever seen that movie?
Do you know what? I haven't. It was the frame dealer day
also,
as well. Got it in one.
Fun fact about that. It's just follow on from El Maharachi, which was the film that Robert Rodriguez made while at film school. Which is unreal. He made an actual feature length film while studying.
So El Mariachi, then Desperado, and then was it Once Upon a Time
Once
in Mexico?
Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, I was about to say in Hollywood there, or the West, which is totally wrong. Video games, exciting hospital shootout, love it. See, it's got me. This is what gets me about these films. Continuous tracking shots and non-stop action. Fucking love a track me. Whoa. Camera's got to keep moving. I've now realised in that. Like, see,
moving in action. Oh,
see any time I watch something now, like even a subtle move, you can see it. I just moved my mic.
What I want in action films is I want steady cams that move.
Steady cams that move. How that does they work? Man. A steady cam that moves.
You know, I hate too much shake. And I got a lot of more recent things, especially the last decades, have suffered from that.
No, I mean, I think a lot of people are doing running gun style.
It's like the Jason Bourne films came about, and it's like, oh, shaky cam, let's start doing that. And it's just a good way to cover up that you're not doing action very well.
Nah, it's not a shaky cam. I think there's a lot of running gun style in these films.
No, this doesn't suffer from that at all. I'm just talking about.
No, but I just mean like, yeah, I don't know.
But I think the action is very. The action is very clear.
You want a fucking tracking steady? Like, what are you all about?
I just want it to. I like my wide shots of action that has all action and scene and it's not too shaky. I like to be able to see what I'm seeing and show it very well. And then it's.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no point in doing action if you can't see it properly. If you're not shooting it properly, what's the point? And this is shot. Balance does it well, so.
It's a good film. That's actually a really good film. It was just interesting reading about its legacy. It's still to this day fucking a good movie. But like I said, I watched what The Killer's also mentioned in some of these articles as well, and I'm like, should need to watch that. I will watch it. It will be on my list of something to watch very soon. But no, fucking banging movie. John Woo, fucking classic action film. Highly recommend. What did we do last? Predator?
Predator,
Nah, it was fucking great film too.
Predator's better.
Different. I would say different.
Better.
See, like, you do things. See, this is what gets you in hot water.
What gets me in hot water? What do you mean?
No, it's just...
Are you going to tell me that this film... It's the way that we've you, just slagged... No. That the middle of this film is very slogged and the plot's not that good. Whereas Predator is just good all round.
I thought... No, there's bad shit in
What's
that,
What's wrong
too.
With Predator?
Like, I'm not doing a... That'll be on the... If you want to listen to what I think's wrong with Predator, please listen to the...
What did we rate Predator? Like a 4.5?
Four and a half.
Are you rating this a 4?
Probably.
I'm not.
Fuck off, right? No, like, see...
I need to do what? I need to give it another watch. I feel like I need to give it another watch, and then that'll be my true rating.
No, like, I know you're laughing, but what am I meant to rate this film? Like a 3?
Well, I'm probably going to give it the 3.5, but I honestly, if someone gave it a 3, I would be like, yeah.
Right, nigga, right, all the John Wick films I like better than this. Well, maybe not the third one.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But I think the third one's still good. But like the thing is we rate films differently, and that's the problem. Like, you end up in like a real fucking, because you rank within a rating.
Oh, yes.
And I'm like, I don't do that shit. Because I feel as though all 5-star films are the same.
I can't do that. I know for a fact I can't go like, oh, I love this film. But I'm going to prefer one.
Right, it's hot. You get yourself in predicaments, I think.
Not all the time. Sometimes there's just two films where I can't choose from.
That's fine.
My favourite film, I don't really know. It changes. I've got my top 5 films are all, I like them like very much.
No, I get what you're saying. Like personal preference will come into it. But I think if somebody was asking for a film recommendation, I would recommend them a 5-star film, but I wouldn't be like, oh, this is the best film in the 5-star films that I've rated, you know. It's like, I don't know, it's hard. I think it's difficult, but you do end up putting yourself in a predicament where you're right, there's not a world, like, I've not seen Argyle, but I've just listened to a podcast about it, and it sounds like a fucking stupid film. And you're going to say that it's better than this film. And that's what I can't comprehend, because I give a lot of, especially iconic and classic films, a slight bump because of the films that we've got because of it that are fucking incredible that we wouldn't have if they didn't exist.
So you're giving a film a bump, but you're giving it the bump, but technically then that would be breaking your rule. You're giving it the bump, meaning every other film in that rating you don't like as much as that film, because you're giving that one a bump.
No, but I'm still rating it a 4. But in my, like, encompassed within my reasoning for a rating, that's part of it. You know what I mean?
I would say that this is probably better than Argyle. With Argyle, I was between the same. I'm doing the exact thing I'm doing the best film I was doing with Argyle. I was between a 3 and a 3.5. That's where I'm at. If I watch Argyle again, I think, do you know what? It's the 3, and I'd give it the 3. If I watch this one and go, oh, wait, hold on. I do need to rewatch this. If I watch it and go, hold on. No, I am being too harsh. I'll up it.
I mean, I don't think a 3.5 is egregious, but I think, like...
But for the moment, I think I'm sitting at a 3.5, and I'm happy. I'm happy with that for the moment until I give it the rewatch.
I'm not a Chinese film watcher. You see all the kind of plot stuff that I don't like, they probably love. Whereas I don't mind plot in a Western film,
right?
I'm not going to dig a film that's got like some form of backstory and plot, you know, where I'm just not, it's quite, there is a language barrier in this film, which I'm 100% fronting up, but I'm not going to then be like, oh, because it's like
I'm not hurting the film. I'm not.
I think there's way more positives in this film than negative.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm giving it a 4.
That's fair enough.
I think it's one of the best films we've watched on the podcast.
No.
Well, I said one of the best, not
it's
the
one,
best.
It's one of the best action, definitely. Oh, right. I mean, actually, action-wise, it's probably the best action film, you know what I mean?
No, Predator, you just said Predator.
Oh, Predator, better. Fuck, aye, well, Predator. But I mean, like, aye.
But it's like it's where I stand. Like the ratings that I give.
I think you like this film. I think you just liked this film more than I did.
I probably did. I. But the thing is I think it's a genre that I like a lot. Like I like action films. I was brought up in action films. Not that's the weird thing. Is like my age group. If my dad was into fucking Hong Kong cinema, I'd have probably seen this when I was like 5. Because when I was watching Arnie and Jean-Claude Van Damme, I'd been watching like fucking Jackie Chan and Police Story. But I didn't. I had a dad that showed me things like Terminator and Predator and fucking Total Recall and Die Hard and Bloodsport and Kickboxer and all of that stuff. But I still, I've got like a nostalgic place for this genre. And see like Predator, for instance. I think Predator is a great film. But based on like the 35 years of films that have been since, and it still takes me back somewhere where I'll give it a really high rating. But is it a 5-star film? I never gave it a 5-star film, but is it a 5-star film? Probably not. But could I give it a 5-star? Probably. It's like I think there's a lot of films on the podcast that we've thought about since, and we've went, does it need a rethink? That like Leon's a big one for me. I genuinely feel as though I underrated the film. Because the more I think about it, the more I'm like, it's so good.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it's getting it from a 4.5 to a 5 is like, it's the thing is all the half increments up until 4.5, you don't deem that wide. And obviously, you've got a big, massive gulf between your 4.5 and your 5-star. And that's why like you deem that as a huge gap in filmmaking. And that's totally fine. Whereas, like, I suppose I view them all equally and I try and work it out. But, yeah. And I'm going to give it a 4. We're at the part of the podcast where we're going to rate the film and deem whether it's cult.
We've just done it.
Like, I've given it a 4. Kenzie's not going to rate it, but, I mean
I watch for the moment, I'm going to give it the 3.5.
Right,
and
fair enough.
What I'll do is I'll watch it again. And then when I watch it again, the review I put on Letterboxd
Your good letterbox? Crop the stick, man.
It is K Dog Kens.
So what fucking hell?
K D A W G _ Kens.
You should have unique branding across all your shit, by the way. Because you're Kens Dogs, K Dogs.
It's I'm K Dog related. Right now, for the most part, I'm K Dog. K Dog is what I've been
K Dog Productions.
I've been going with K-Dog or K-Dog Kens, you know,
get your wee friend to make you a wee dog kind of company logo. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not gonna fucking name them on the podcast, but you know what I mean. And if they listen, they'll know who they mean as well. But that's fine. I thought you were gonna ask them to do us a logo.
I mean, I can if we want.
I've asked you like the last
time. I mean, I'll ask.
It's right here, look.
No, that's
if
that's
they like, don't want to ask, totally fine.
No, they do commissions.
Oh, they do commissions. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? Is that a good price?
She undersells herself.
Does she?
Yeah.
Right, well, my price is you get to come on the podcast for a few episodes.
All right. Well, then I'll pay her then.
I don't give a fuck. Like fair, is that where she is? Like professional artist, nah.
I mean, she's a good art artist.
I'm not saying that she's fuck off. Bad.
Moxie, who we've had on the podcast, she's done like emotes for him on Twitch and stuff like that, and they're very good.
Saying anything about that. We don't make any money on the podcast.
What,
I mean,
like, you know what? We'll talk about what type of logo we want, and I'll say to her, I'll be like,
I'm open to suggestions. I'm not. The current logo is just a fucking graphic.
The thing is, if we do another logo, do you want to keep the, for nostalgic purposes, keep the pot, keep some sort of popcorny thing? Do we keep the do we just do a better popcorn bucket?
Maybe, I don't know.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, it's open popcorn, to it's,
a cup of coffee. Or so,
no, it doesn't. I don't know. Like, it, the name came about. It stuck. I mean, we could do a full rebrand. Let's come up with a new name.
I like the name.
See what I mean? Like, we're stuck with the name. That's fine. Like, just well, if she does commissions, then surely we go come up with ideas for us, and then she comes back with them. We go, I want that one. How much is it?
I guess we could do that.
Well, that seems how Fiverr works. You know what I mean? Do you?
Well, you either give them an idea, or do you ask what? Or you
like, ask for an idea. I want a logo for my podcast. It's got 30, in fact, it's got 30 main episodes and then fucking another 100.
And it's 100. Called Cult Film Cafe.
It's called Cult Film Cafe. There you go. Link it to film. You know what I mean? No, you know what would be actually pretty sick is if, well, not done it yet, but the scratch-off poster that we're doing it on has got wee symbols from the films. We could maybe just do like a few iconic versions of those or some of the kind of best films or the culty films
like
that we've done.
Mix them together.
I don't know. Just off the top of my head. But anyway, that is it for this episode of the podcast. And
we've not said if it's a cult film or not.
Fuck off, you dickhole.
God, I'm sorry. That's the main part of the podcast. We actually have to do it.
Right, okay. Oh, right, well, right, fair enough. Is it cult? Yes.
Yes. Sorry, it was easy. It was easy. Would I put it on the list? Yeah, I would recommend
well,
it.
I would recommend this one. It goes on the list.
As well. This is a film. You should be checking out, like especially if you don't watch any Hong Kong cinema. Like this is not the best of Hong. I mean, it's a very strong one, but yeah, I would. I don't know where I'd put it on the list. That's gonna be kind of hard. I'll maybe put it on. Do you know what? I would probably put it around about on the lower half. So maybe in the '20s, maybe in the '30s. But I'll maybe. Do you know what? I'll stick it in the '30s. I'll stick it around about 36. That's. I'm happy with that for the moment. I would again probably have to think about that. But at the moment, I would stick it round about there.
Yeah, like I mean, I agree. It's a cult film. I don't actually place things on a list. I would put it on my top 100 list, though. I feel as though, even though this film has garnered more and more appreciation over the years, I still think it's a cult film. A lot of the times when this happens, the film then doesn't become cult anymore for whatever fucking reason. Because I think if it's a cult, it's like. Fuck it, let's talk about Evil Dead because Evil Dead is people talk about that film as if it's the best film ever, right? It's got huge appreciation or Evil Dead 2, whatever one of the two, right? But it's always going to be a cult film.
Like, yeah.
It's like, so that kind of fucks me off about some of these films where or they grow in appreciation and then when you talk about them 40 years later you go, aye, but it's so popular now. Aye, but it's probably still a cult film. Do you know what I mean?
It depends on the film, but I think for like things like Evil Dead, yeah, especially if you're looking at something like Army of Darkness, which is definitely...
But I mean, I struggle with Blade Runner. And even to this day, I still struggle with what I said in the podcast. I can't even remember what I said, but I said, I'm pretty sure I was the one that argued that because it remained relevant in cult in the culture, film culture, that it couldn't be a cult film. When in retrospect, it kind of probably was. It probably should still be deemed that way. I even think 2049 is slightly culty. Even though it was a popular film made by a good filmmaker and had successful people in it, nobody speaks about it anymore. It was made, 5 years ago? It's not in common consensus. Like, nobody ever turns into me and goes, Blade Runner 2049, what a film. But then I suppose people do it when the film kind of goes and comes and dies and disappears and all of that shit. But no, this is a cult film. It probably will forever remain a cult film because it's not Hollywood. That's a sad thing to say. But yeah, that is it for this episode of the podcast. But if you would like to support us in any way, please go and give us a follow wherever you listen. We are at Cult Film Cafe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be that Apple Music or Spotify, or you can even listen to us over on the YouTube at Cult Film Cafe there as well.
Yep.
But yeah, so goodbye from me.
It is goodbye from me.
Podcast out.